Dr. Rock's radio show. Every Thursday night at 9 on raconteursnews.com. We go to 11.
Well, good evening and a very warm welcome, one and all, to this evening's Dr. Rock's radio show here on raconteursnews.com. That, of course, was Motorhead, in case you hadn't spotted it. I'm so bad, baby, I don't care. That's just a wicked rumour. Before that, we had the Fink Brothers and Mutants in Mega City 1. Mutants are waiting on every corner. Remember to call for Judge Dredd. That was the Fink Brothers, where I think some members of Madness who decided to turn out that. And I've still got to try and get the track from the A side. And before that, the Buffalo Skinners from last year's Fire in the Mountain Festival. And Lord, Lord, Lord. And, of course, the views of the musicians are not necessarily the views of the presenter or the station. And tonight, I'm very, very happy to say that I'm joined by a long-standing friend of mine, Sinewave, to talk about administration and consent and how we might be resisting some of the things that are becoming so, so common in what is laughably called a society. So welcome to the show, Sinewave. Thanks very much for joining us, mate.
Thank you, Nick. How are you?
I'm doing very well indeed, thank you very much. I've enjoyed a day in the sunshine and the chemtrails.
Yes, same here.
And it's election day here, so you know, on the previous show, thanks for that, guys, Andy and Jason and Jimmy. Jimmy, great to hear your voice again. It's actually election day in Mid Wales, so I thought we might as well pass a nod at it because it serves to introduce a few subjects. We are apparently but apparently the people of Cymru are being asked to vote for 60 men and women who are actually going to be filling 40 places in the Welsh Assembly, which is a new brand, relatively new brand of government in Cardiff. And also, interestingly, they're voting apparently for a police and crime commissioner. If you were here, would you be voting then, Sinewave?
No, would I fuck?
So why not? You do realise that if you don't vote, you haven't got a right to express an opinion, surely?
That made me laugh even more. yeah, quite right. Yeah. Well, it's like the jumping from the frying pan into the fire scenario, isn't it?
Well, it is. And I mean, I actually gave it up a long time ago, the voting thing, largely just because I observed that none of the people that were being voted for were ever doing what they said they were going to do, and they certainly weren't coming close to even suggesting that they might do any of the things that I thought were appropriate. But subsequently realising what registration means and recognising that really men and women can't actually vote, can they?
No, it's handed over legal title.
And that's the thing, isn't it? That's one of the things that we're interested in tonight, is just exactly how it is that we hand over our kind of consent, how it is we're kind of backing up the system. And it seems to be something that confuses people, registration, but perhaps you might like to say a little bit about what the difference is between the man who thinks he's voting and the entity that is actually putting a cross on the paper.
Well, I suppose to start with, we have to look at the whole name game thing, and particularly the word person. And this is really, really basic. I'm sure we've all been over it, you know, in the early days of doing our research. But I think it's fundamental to understanding who we are. And just a little side note to that. I mean, the word name. When you look at the etymology of the word name, it comes from the Latin nomen. So it's N-O-M-E-N, i.e. no men. Which is quite telling.
I haven't spotted that. That's a good one.
Yeah. I looked at the etymology, and when I saw that, it blew me away. And I just went, wow, they were putting that out there sort of years and years ago, that it's no men. But we look at what a person is. Sorry, just to go back to a name. There's a lot of talk about legal name fraud, etc. And I'd just like to sort of demonstrate how all names are entities. And there's a very simple formula that I used to use with people that were new to this information to demonstrate how that was the case. So I'd say to them, write your given name on a piece of paper. So they'd write their given name down, and I'd say, hold it up, and I'd say, is that you? Now, the vast majority of people would say, yes. So then you'd point at their body, their vehicle, and say, well, who are you then? Now, we could go much deeper into that, obviously. Are you that vehicle? But in the physical world, we are this body. So I'd ask the question, are you those words on a piece of paper or that physical body? You can't be both. Which one are you? And that clearly demonstrates that we are not a name. A name is just a transmitting utility to deal with corporations within the legal world. But it's when we look at the word person, and you can go to all sorts of legal dictionaries and you find that there is a natural person and a legal person, etc. But if you go to the Interpretation Act, which is 1978, I believe, yeah, 1978, and it interpret, oh, sorry, it's, it doesn't interpret, it's in a definition section. So it defines the word within statute, and the word person includes a body of persons, corporate or unincorporate. Well, it's, if you break all that down, and Bill Thornton on his 1215.org website did some great work on breaking that down. But when we look at the word includes, we generally see it as being expansive, but it's actually, it's contractive, it's limited.
It means is comprised of, doesn't it?
Exactly. It's like it includes A, B or C.
Yeah.
And if there is, if something is not included within that definition, then it's limited to that definition.
Yeah.
So when we look at that, a body of a person is a body of persons, which is interesting, because how can a man or woman be a body of persons? Mm. My theory on it is that the body of persons is formed when the man or woman accepts that they are the name. This is what where it ties in with the name. The name is an entity, and if the man and woman or woman accepts that they are that entity, then they form that body of persons. That's what creates that body.
Yeah, and therefore that's another, a bit like the registration, that's another form of giving consent, isn't it? Recognize, allowing yourself to be recognized by this name.
Of course, and it's using the occult to make people, I mean, this is so simple, to make people believe that they are a name, that they are an entity. Mm. And once people sort of buy into that and they accept that, then that ties them into contract within that fictitious world of corporations.
It's interesting, isn't it, that in I know that in several old fairy stories, and certainly a lot of dragon stories, there's a big thing made about the name and not letting other people know what it is.
Yeah, this goes back to Egyptian times. The pharaohs would have a secret name, and that name was to be kept secret because it was believed that if people knew that name, then they could use that with witchcraft against them. It also goes ties in with witchcraft, where you would select a given name for yourself, and you're told you keep that name secret. And the reason that you're told to keep that name secret is that if anyone knows that name, then they can use ritual spells, etc., against you.
Yes, indeed. And knowing the name is the equivalent, for some reason, to having a lock of hair or something to work with.
Exactly. It's very, very similar. And it's funny. Did you ever hear about how Madonna would have a DNA cleared up from every room that she had, dressing room?
No, I didn't.
Yeah, she used to have her room cleaned up, so all her DNA was taken out of that room.
Well, you can sort of see why, can't you? I mean, I'm pretty certain that quite a lot of misunderstanding is going to arise as a result of use of that kind of material in the future.
Yeah, of course.
So when we talk about going down to the polling booth and putting our little pencil cross on a piece of paper and voting for the monster raving loony party or whatever, it's actually the person that's voting, yeah?
That's what I would believe, Doctor. Yes, it's the person giving their consent to that, you know, dictatorial party
Are you still there, or have I lost you? You've gone very quiet. I wonder what's happening there. Let me just have a quick look at my Skype. Well, there we go. That was just a little bit of the Asian Dub Foundation. Thanks for the voter support for that one, Jimmy. I'll try and remember to put it on again a little later in the show, perhaps, although it's quite a long tune. I have managed to re-establish contact with Sinewave, as far as we can tell. You are back with us there, mate.
I'm here, Nick. Yeah, sorry about that. My Skype, I think, just went down.
Oh, right. Okay. Well, it's really good that you're back there. And I think we were talking about registration of votes and the person.
Yep. I can't remember where we were when we went down, but I think I was basically just saying it's a pointless exercise. It's not the man or woman that's vote is registered. You know, it's the person, it's that persona. And no matter who you vote for, as you well know, the same shit happens, and it has done for thousands of years. And it baffles me that people actually, you know, if you observe what we've seen over just our own lifetime, and you can go back in history and look at what's happened prior to when we came about into this vehicle that we're in now, that nothing ever changes. It's a completely pointless exercise.
That's it. The faces change, but the Nazis are still there.
Yeah, I mean, you know, when you look at what's going on now, I mean, if you know, I get my news generally, it's like reading a newspaper. I go to David Icke's latest headlines on a daily basis, and I try and keep a sense of humour, but you sometimes have to laugh through it. I mean, some of the stories are just incredible, and you think we're talking about. It's funny. I was having a discussion with someone the other day, and we were talking about the Holocaust and what apparently happened to the Jews in the Holocaust. And while we're witnessing it, while we're discussing it, I was saying we're actually witnessing a Holocaust in Palestine, in Eastern Europe, with the Kurds in Turkey, whatever, and no one seems particularly bothered by it. I mean, apart from within the circles that we probably mix in, but the vast majority of the world's population just seem oblivious to what's going on.
It is amazing, isn't it? And it is like I like you, I'm really confused by the Holocaust thing. It seems to me to be the deepest of ironies that that Israel is doing what it's doing, given its apparent history. But it's all down, isn't it? It's the same as the voting, really, because people tell me, as you know, I told you I had a discussion with a lady who told me that I should be paying attention to the politicians, and that, like I said earlier, you know, you basically haven't got a right to express an opinion if you don't vote. Whereas in fact, it's the other way around, isn't it? You're handing over your power to express an opinion just by registering your vote.
Well, it takes away when you're relying on someone else to give you a moral compass to guide you. It's taken away what should be inherent within us to govern ourselves. And this is one of the things that baffles me, is that people will consistently say, we need government, we need someone to control us. And if you ask those very people who pose that question to you, and you say, are you not capable of governing yourself? And they say, of course I am. You know, do you not have a moral compass to guide you? Oh, of course I do. Then why on earth would you require some government official to provide you with a moral compass to guide you?
Do you think it's possible that what's actually happening is people are assuming that nobody else can govern themselves, and that's why we need somebody to do it for us?
Well, quite possibly. But what frustrates me is if you do, like I've done a few sort of little short surveys with people, nothing spectacular, but just by, you know, talking with people, and I'd ask them a few questions like, do you believe we can trust politicians? Do you believe that they are honourable and moral? And the vast majority of people come back and say, no, they're a bunch of shysters. Those same people would say, but, you know, I'd ask them, well, do you vote? Well, yes. Well, why? You just said that those people are immoral. and that they're shysters and they can't be trusted, which everyone knows. But yeah. still, they believe in the voting system.
Yeah.
And still, yeah. they have a false belief in government.
Yeah, and they believe what they read in, what people tend to believe what they read in the newspapers as well. And journalists also are hugely untrusted now, I see, in kind of recent surveys. Journalists and politicians between them are about the bottom of the list.
Well, this is funny because quite synchronistic there, because one of the other people that I'd mention would be, do you believe you can trust politicians, journalists, police, etc.? And probably the two most least trusted in the sort of short surveys that I did would be politicians and the press.
Yes, and yet they're apparently entirely at the helm. So when did you start realising this kind of stuff? Are you one of those that was born down the rabbit hole, or did you have it rudely thrust upon you?
It's funny because I believe I was born down the rabbit hole, but I didn't necessarily quite understand what was going on. I mean, I was lucky. I was a juvenile delinquent, so they called me. I was a young criminal, so I was sort of thrust into this world. I was totally anti-establishment. And basically I didn't play ball. So I experienced the violence that you would get if ever you questioned, whether it was teachers, whether it was police, etc. And, but it wasn't until a few years later, that I came across, a David Icke book, and that's when I really went down the rabbit hole. But it was a bit like the Matrix. It was a bit like the red pill, blue pill scene. And funny enough, just a little anecdote. My wife and my kids were watching the Matrix, and I'd never watched it before. It was probably a couple of years after it was released, and they were watching it on video. And I came in the room, and I probably said something like, "What's this shit?" And I said, "Shut up, Dad. Shut up, Dad." And I sat down, and I started watching it with them. And it was at the point, the blue pill, red pill scene, that famous scene, and the words just hit me. And I'm just getting it up now, actually, so that I can quote it. I mean, it's often been quoted, but it's worth quoting again, because...
I know the bit you're after, yeah. It's like you say, it's well worth hunting down. It's a movie I've watched again and again and again, and it is, it just gets more real as time goes by, actually.
Oh, it's fantastic. I've just got it up now, and it says, "Let me tell you why you're here. You know something. What you know, you can't explain." Now, these words really resonated with me when I heard them. What you know, you can't explain, but you feel it. You felt it your entire life. Something's wrong with the world. You don't know what, but it's there. Like a splinter in your mind, driving you mad. It's the feeling that brought you to me. Do you know what I'm talking about? The Matrix. Now, when I heard that bit, it blew me away, because that made me realise that I had realised something was wrong with the world since I was born. It really was so synchronistic to hear those words. And when I look back now, and I look back at times in my life, and I go back to important parts of my life, I realised that I always knew something was wrong. So I'd always been down the rabbit hole, but just not had the information.
Yeah,
and it wasn't till I came across that information, and particularly occult information, that everything started to fall into place, and I started to go, "Oh my God, now I'm making some sense of this." I mean, there was, going back probably 20 years ago, I remember saying to friends and family, I was saying, "Have you noticed how the world's going mad?" And people say, what do you mean?" I said, "Well, people are driving so fast. Everyone's trying to get somewhere, you know, so quickly. Everyone's so rude, you know. And why is everyone getting cancer?" And I'd be met by sort of astonishment. People would say, "Well, what the bloody hell are you talking about?" And I would say, do you not notice? Do you not see what's going on?" And it was a very frustrating time, and continued like that for several years, like you probably found yourself, Doctor. And it's only been in recent years, probably the last, I don't know, probably 2 or 3 years, where some of us that have been down the rabbit hole for some time are actually starting to go, "Phew," and pinch ourselves and go, "Wow, this world is waking up, and it's getting very interesting."
That must have been a pretty fascinating experience, actually, being down there for so long and working on solutions and all the rest of it, whilst the vast majority of people have no acknowledgement of the problem at all.
Can you hear me, Nick? You're cracking up there, mate. I can hardly hear you.
Oh, right, I'm sorry. Can you hear me any better now? Oh, it sounds like we're going again. We're clearly going to be having an interesting time with the Skype tonight. So I think what we'll do is we'll probably put on... See if we can find slightly shorter songs. I will play the Asian Dub Foundation a little bit later, but for the moment, if we're going to be taking sort of a few minutes kind of interruptions, here we go. Let's have a bit of Johnny Cash, and we'll see if once again we can't get hold of Sine Wave. A bit bloody frustrating. There you go. Here we go. Here's Johnny Cash and A Boy Named Sue. There you go, that was A Boy Named Sue by Johnny Cash, filling in for a little bit of technical difficulty we're having. Skype seems to be a little bit choppy tonight, but you are listening to Dr. Rock's radio show on raconteursnews.com, and after A Boy Named Sue, we should now have a man named Sine Wave back on the line. You're still there, mate?
I'm still here.
Excellent. So away we go again. It looks like we might be coming at you in kind of 10 or 12 minute chunks, folks. But that's the way it goes, eh? So I noticed you've actually mentioned the occult a couple of times now, and it sounded there just before we got cut off like that was what attracted your attention rather than the state of the law and the administration. Is that right?
That's absolutely 100%, Doctor. I'd always had an interest in the paranormal and the occult. And once I got my teeth into a few books, I just like devoured occult books and have done ever since. And what it started to do was it started to all of a sudden answer the question, why? Why was this happening? Why was that happening? And I started to find some answers, and I just threw myself into that information. I was so intrigued that I eventually joined some occult orders. I joined a couple of Mork, Rosicrucian order, the Fraternity of Hidden Light, which is a magical order. I was doing Kabbalah workshops, tarot workshops with Dennis Wheatley's daughter, Maria Wheatley, who you may have come across.
Yeah, I've met Maria. She did. I went on a 2-hour tarot, 1-hour tarot demo she did at one of the Truth Juice gatherings, and it was brilliant. It was well worth being with her for 60 minutes.
Oh, she's absolutely awesome, and she, if you can get her as a guest, get her, because I just think she's got some fantastic information. She's an expert diviner. She does tarot lessons and all sorts, but she's got just some amazing information. Her books are awesome. A really good time spent with her. Just threw myself into the occult. Just wanted to know, what is magic? Does it work? What does it all mean? That's where I started to find some correlations between law and the occult and how the whole system works. And many people have also gone through, you know, this whole meme of how it works. But it was when I was reading a book about how to summon entities that it really hit me. And it does hit you, the words. And just to sort of paraphrase from you know, various books, but one in particular, and it went something like this. It went, in order to summon an entity, you need to know its name and seal in order to control it. Now, just that sentence, you know, you break it down. In order to summon an entity, you need to know its name and seal in order to control it. And it hit me. This is the whole legal system way of summoning the entity, which is the name.
That is a brilliant quote, mate. I really like that one. The name and seal, because that's basically recognition of the name and a signature, I guess.
Exactly. The sign of nature, the signature is the seal. And, you know, this is without doubt, this is what they're doing. These people dressed in black in their robes, etc., you know, they're occultists, and they're fooling us. And they're fooling us very, very simply into being that name, being that end of which, you know, I'd say, and I'd go away from people that say that a name is a legal fiction. It's an entity, as we demonstrated earlier by, you know, the suggesting to people, you know, right, you give them name down on a piece of paper, ask yourself the question, is that you? It confirms that the name is not you, therefore it's an entity. It doesn't exist in the physical world. And when we respond to the name, then bang, it takes you into that world. And I'd say it's like a, you know, it's a jurisdiction, but it's like a parallel universe. And that's the transmitting utility that takes you in there, is that name.
So effectively, whenever we hand over the name and the signature, say even on a voting registration form, you're suggesting that we're not only giving away our vote, but we're also entering into some sort of occult relationship?
Yeah, without doubt.
Mm. That must have been pretty chilling spotting that, wasn't it? Can you remember how old you were when you spotted the link between what the legal system is doing and these kind of deep occult books you were reading?
It was about 4 years ago. Mm. It was about 4 or 5 years ago that I started getting deeply into the occult. And that's when it started to occur to me, reading these various books, that that's what was panning out. I hope you excuse the pun. But that's what we were being drawn into. We're being drawn into, you know, this fictitious world where, you know, in order for us to engage, in order for the corporations or the court or the council, etc., to engage with us, because they're not a physical being, they're not a human being, they don't have a physical body, they don't have consciousness, they are in effect an egregore. And I don't know if your listeners know what an egregore is.
That's a new word on me. I like it. An egregore. What's one of them?
Well, an egregore is often you'll come across it in occultism. It's in effect, it's a thought form. So the belief is that we can create via our thought. Hermetic principle is that the world is mental and that we create via our thoughts. So we can create egregores, which is, you know, is a thought form. So I went on Wikipedia a while back, and I was actually saying to people that government is an egregore. The council is an egregore. And I was discussing this with various people, and I went on Wikipedia, and I put in the word egregore, and I wrote down what I found. And this is from Wikipedia, which can't always be trusted, but this is what I found. Egregore is an occult concept representing a thought form or collective group mind, an autonomous psychic entity made up of and influencing the thoughts of a group of people. The symbiotic relationship between the egregore and its group has been compared to the more recent, non-occult concepts of the corporation as a legal entity and the mean.
Wow.
Now, I like that. They put it there, the non-occult concepts of the corporation.
Yeah.
Well, of course, it is a cult.
Yeah. Yeah, well, ultimately, the whole thing is a church, isn't it? All the guys in black robes are ministers of one sort or another, whether they're in a court or in a church or in the Houses of Parliament.
Exactly, yes.
Patrick's put in the chat box, he says, I'll agree that the world is fecking mental. You go. We've got a couple of questions come up as well. Lee's put in there, he's put that intent is a quality that seems to be entrenched in the occult. And he says he's sure you'd agree that it's absolutely core to the whole game.
It is core, and again, it's to do with mentalism, the concept and the principle of mentalism, because our intent, It's formed by the trilogy. So when you think about it, in order to create, first, Marc Passio goes into this, and I'm a big fan of Marc Passio, but you'll also find this in Manly P. Hall's works, etc., which I think Marc Passio probably borrows quite heavily from.
And anybody who's not read Manly P. Hall should definitely give him a go. There's some well interesting stuff in there.
You can download hours and hours and hours of his presentations on audio, his books. Just be careful what books you buy, because if you buy Secret Teachings of All Ages, there's many books that you'll find that are quite pricey that are actually just sections from that very book. So that's the one that I'd recommend, The Secret Teachings of All Ages.
Yeah.
But there's the trinity of thought, emotion, and action. And so when you think about when you want to make something manifest in the physical world, it first exists as a thought. So I'm sat here around my table that I made, and that obviously first existed as a thought. I'd like a table. Then the emotion comes in. Yeah, it'd be very nice because my family can sit around it and we can get together. But that doesn't become manifest in the physical world unless I actually go through the process of physically making the action of physically making that table. So we know that intent is very important, but it doesn't come to fruition in this physical world unless we make it manifest through our actions.
Exactly right. And it is a question of manifesting things through actions rather than through putting a cross on a piece of paper, I believe.
Exactly, because there's no action there. And that one of the laws, there's various universal laws, natural laws, spiritual laws, whatever you want to call them, they're in existence. And one is the law of compensation. And I often used to think, how can people expect to pay their mortgage off, bearing in mind the work it takes to, produce a house? Even if you think about taking the materials, you know, that wood that goes into the rafters, those bricks that build the foundations and the walls of that house, how can we think that we can somehow pay that off through, the fraudulent financial system with a promissory note? How does that equate when you take into account the law of compensation? How does that equate? It doesn't.
No, because you've got a real and substantive thing for which completely imaginary things are being exchanged. Is that what you mean?
Exactly. I mean, yeah. The law of compensation, you could use the biblical term, we reap what we sow. So we all know, I mean, the secret to success is hard work. The harder you work, the more success you get. And that's obviously the law of compensation is involved with that. You're compensated via your efforts. And we all find as well that, and I've noted this just watching people that thought that maybe they could do some process. And this is where I focus on things like templates. So if you use a template from a website and you do it now, you're not going through the trinity of thought, emotion, and action. You're looking at anything. I've got this debt that I've got to deal with, or this alleged debt that I've got to deal with. And here's this template and I'm going to fill it in. It's someone else's words. I'm not really putting any form of intention, any form of action into it. I'm just going to fill in this template, send it off and hope that it's going to work. And invariably it doesn't. And I've noticed that this was happening time and time again, that some people were getting results using the same formula that other people would use, and they'd get fucked. And the only thing that I could think of, well, hold on, how does that work? Well, there's laws in force, and they're not adhering to these laws.
Yeah.
We reap what we sow. If you put the efforts in, you'll reap your rewards.
So, let's concentrate on the debt thing for a minute then. If presumably, as a result of these realizations, you started taking action to try and, I don't know, kind of reassert the actual man as opposed to this egregore. If it's not a matter of dealing with a template, how do you set about using your intent and action to see to, say, debt? It seems like a good place to start.
Well, I'd first say that before I sort of became aware of this knowledge, I'd going back to 2008, I'd put on an event with a guy called Matt Deleuze, who's an author of several books, and I met a guy there, Nick Cooper, and Nick introduced me to the Freedom Movement, or the Freeman Movement, whatever you want to call it. And he sent me a few videos, Rob Menard and Winston Shrout and Mary Cross ebook, which title I can know, How I Cash Confiscated Every Bureaucratic, Cash Confiscating, oh, I can't remember.
We know the book you mean.
You know the one I mean, yeah. Long title. And anyways, I sort of set out from there, thought, right, I'm going to have a go at a few things, and had a couple of credit card issues, thought I'd give it a go, and unfortunately watched a few anti-terrorist videos, and decided on the first occasion that a claim was made against me, and I ended up in court, and I decided I was going to follow the anti-terrorist videos on, I can't think of the exact titles, but how to deal with the court, something like that. Yeah. And in the videos, and he's probably changed his opinion since, to give the guy credit, but I mean, this was some years ago, but he was suggesting about going into court as the authorised representative for the known, which I attempted to do. This is something that Roger Hayes did, and I'd just like to sort of try and go through why this doesn't make any sense to me now, when I look at it now. When we look at what a person is, and a person is a body of persons, and what I've suggested is that that body of persons, because a man or woman obviously logically isn't a body of persons. What I'm suggesting is the body of persons is formed when the man or woman accepts that they are the legal entity or the name, and that forms the body of persons.
Nice description of that, forming the body of person.
Yeah. And so what happens when we go in as the authorised representative for the name? We're in effect forming the body, and we then become culpable because we're the man or woman stood in front of that judge, and he's just said, hold on, this idiot in here has just come here, and he said, I am not that legal entity, that legal person. Now, the first thing I'd be thinking as the judge is, well, what the fuck are you doing here then?
Yep.
Because you just responded to a letter that was sent to that name. Now you're turning up in court saying you're not the name, but you're there to represent the name. Well, you just formed the body of persons.
Yep. The effectively, just by turning up, you've put on the mask and walked onto the stage as a physical entity.
Exactly. You just accepted that you're and that you're representing that entity.
So does that mean that a summons is just some sort of phishing exercise?
Without doubt. Without doubt. It's, I mean, John from TPUC, just forgot his name.
John Harris.
Yeah, he went into this some years ago in depth, how it's a, you know, it's an invitation to court, etc. And in my experience, what I've actually found out is that by not going to court, the results I've had have far outweighed the results that when I went to court. In fact, every time I went to court, judgment was given against me.
Mm.
I'll give some examples. I went to court with HMRC in 2010, I'd been challenging the payment of income tax with HMRC for a couple of years prior to that. And I decided to go to court, and I thought, yeah, I'll go in there. I'm going to go in as the person. I've already tried to go in as the authorised representative, which failed badly. So I'm just going to go in as a person. I'm not going to argue it, because I want to see what pans out here and what happens, because I think I've got irrefutable proof that I have no obligation whatsoever to pay income tax. So I went along to the court, and the representative for HMRC said, Mr. Keogh has an obligation to pay income tax. Sorry, Mr. Sinewave has an obligation to pay income tax. under the Taxes Management Act 1970. And I said, sir, I've read through that document and my name's not in it. So how does it apply to me? And of course, the judge went off his head and said, of course, it can't have millions of people's names in it. It's ridiculous, whatever. So I said, well, how does it apply to me then? And he said, well, as a citizen of the United Kingdom, that includes you. So I said, what proof do you have that I am a United Kingdom citizen? Which, may I remind you, there is no such thing. Anyways, eventually we went through the whole person thing. I read from numerous legal dictionaries then said they're irrelevant, however, because the definition is given within the Interpretation Act, which defines all words within statute. And anyways, the judge went off and he said, well, I'm going to have to recess for a couple of hours to go to the court library to look through this stuff. And he came out and he said, right, he gave his summary and he told me I wasn't allowed to speak while he gave his summary, but I'd be allowed to ask questions after. So he gave his summary and he decided that in his summary that the word person wasn't defined within the Interpretation Act, but that he was going to redefine it to mean a man or woman. So at the end of his summing up, I said, could I ask one question, sir? He said, yes, you can. I said, what gives you the authority to redefine words that are already defined within statute? And he asked me to leave. So I asked him the question again, and he asked me to leave, and he said, go now or I'll call security. The interesting point is that was in December of 2010. Judgment was given against me, and I've not paid a penny since. And not only that, I've never had HMRC contact me since that day.
Very interesting. Well, I think that would probably be quite a good point to go for a quick music break, don't you? And then we can come back and pick the bones out of that after a break. What do you think?
Yeah, why not?
Okay. You're listening to Dr. Rock chatting with Sinewave, and there's lots more of similar stuff to come as we look into how it is that you can actually deal with these people who are giving us such a hard time. But here's a suggestion from Tenpole Tudor. It's over the hill with the swords of 1,000 men. If all else fails, why the hell not? Alabama 3 there, and how long we got to wait until we get a key to the mansion on the hill. And before that, as I said, Tenpole Tudor and over the hill with the swords of 1,000 men. And we're talking tonight with Sinewave about the occult and about law and legislation and consent and many other things. And I think you're still there, are you, Sinewave? Oh, very good. Hang on a moment. There we go. It works better if I press that button. I'm sure you're still there, aren't you?
It's just about.
Excellent stuff. So before the break, we discovered that the court thing, for some strange reason, really didn't work out for you, even though you tried it several times and using various methods. So presumably that really forced you back to the basics, did it? Back to your toolkit.
It did. I mean, I wanted to try out a few things. I mean, I was quite intrigued to go about trying out a few different methods. And then in about, I think it was about 2010, I first came across No Contract Return to Sender, which was an article that was on the TPUC website. And it was actually a guy in Milton Keynes, apparently, who was a friend of John Harris's, that first come up with this idea. And I'm from Milton Keynes, never met the guy, don't know who it was. But anyways, I read the article and it resonated with me. And I thought, yeah, that's I quite like that, because I'm not someone who could be bothered to really spend the rest of their life just immersed in statute. I found it absolutely boring.
And where would you go with so much of it?
Oh God, it is. I mean, I take my hat off to the likes of Simon Spaniard and Michael of Venetia, these guys that a good friend of mine, Norman Hinks, that, you know, they're like a dictionary of statute, but I just find it incredibly boring. And there was all these complex ideologies to find a way out. And I thought, there's got to be something that's a real remedy, because it's not a remedy unless everyone can access it and use it and find a way out. Yeah. You know, yeah. If it's only for someone that's a law graduate or a member of Mensa, then it's not really a true remedy. So when I came across no contract return sender, I thought, yeah, this really resonates with me. So I thought, well, I'll give it a go. So at the time, I was I was driving around in a vehicle with no tax, no MOT, no insurance, and of course I had the first fine come through for not declaring it sworn. So I followed the process, no contract, return the sender, just put it in the post, send it off, and nothing happened. Nothing came of it. And I thought, wow. Anyways, within, I think, probably about a month, 6 weeks later, a nice traffic warden stuck a little note on the car, as they do, and another fine came through, and again, I returned it, and nothing came of it. And I thought, well, this is quite fascinating. So I kept with it, and what I did was I changed it slightly to, I didn't like the no contract part. I like the idea of returning mail, but I just tried different things. So I would try addressee unknown, addressee not recognised, no longer at this address, and I'd return mail. And I did this with various things. This was not just for me, but with friends and family. My old daddy kept getting himself into trouble. He was getting fines from the highways agency. Parking in restricted zones, and he'd turn up and say, oh, what do I do with this? And I'd say, give it to me, Dad. And I'd just write various things on the front of the envelope, but return the mail. And what we found was they kept just disappearing. Nothing was coming back. And so I started speaking to people, said, this is so powerful. And then I started, to explore, well, why does this work? And already had ideas about it. But then it made total sense when you started to study the occult and get some occult knowledge, and you thought, well, this is an entity, whether it's council, whatever, company, government, organization that's attempting to contact you. And, by returning their mail or even throwing it away. I mean,
I was going to ask that, whether throwing it away works just as well.
Well, this is really interesting. I thought I'd found something. I thought, wow, this is so powerful. I'm returning their mail and it's working. My dad, as you know, I used to put on a lot of events in Milton Keynes with various guest speakers from up and down the country. And we'd be exploring all these different ways of dealing with these corporate entities attacking us. And my dad pulled me up at one of these events one day. I think it was a Simon Spaniard workshop. And he said, oh, I've got a confession to make. And I said, what's that? And he said, I've been getting a lot of letters from debt collectors. And I said, okay, what are you doing with them? He said, well, I put them in a drawer at home. I said, okay, have you ever had, a claim made against you or a knock at the door or anything? He said, no. I said, well, keep doing it. It works. And so I learned from that, you don't have to return mail. You can just ignore them. I mean, the way I always explain it to people is, imagine if Mickey Mouse sent you a text and said, do you fancy a pint on Friday at 7 down the Fox and Hounds? Well, you know, Mickey Mouse is a fictional entity, doesn't exist. Would you turn up? And of course, people say, well, no, of course I wouldn't. There is no such thing as Mickey Mouse. I said, well, why would you turn up at a court? Why would you respond to mail from an entity? They don't exist in the physical world. There is no such thing as the government, the council, etc. They don't exist in the physical world.
But are you there? Have we lost you again? Yes, I think we have.
Oh, can you hear me?
Yeah, you're back again. Very good, yeah. So the councils are entities that don't exist in the physical world.
No, they're words. They're names on a piece of paper, the vocalised expression of a sound. A bit like our name, like I was explaining earlier, write your given name on a piece of paper, hold it up and ask yourself the question, is that you? It can't, you can't be words on a piece of paper and the body and, the vehicle, at the same time.
But if you respond, you make yourself real and you make them real.
Exactly. You give them substance. and it takes you into a different dimension, or in a legal term, they'd use the term jurisdiction. I would refer it to as a different dimension or a different plane. And once you go into that plane, different rules apply.
Yeah. So they're effectively trying to make you physical and themselves physical, give everything a degree of existence. But effectively what all of these things are from these entities are fishing expeditions, fishing exercises. They are attempts to, they're offers of contract, aren't they?
Yeah, I mean, I'd go back, just going back on what you said initially there, is that when you think of an egregore that we spoke about earlier, an egregore is a thought form, so it's created via our thoughts. So in order for the government, the council, to be given credence or any form of substance or to exist, only can happen via our thought. Once we take our thought away from that, that thing no longer exists because it's a creation of thought. I don't know if I've made that very clear there.
That seems pretty clear to me. But that, of course, is what government is all about, isn't it? Is about a controlling mind and controlling minds.
Well, the very word government, as Mark Passio demonstrated, it comes from the Latin gubernare. There was no classical V there's no V in classical Latin. So you would use the word I'm losing my train of thought there. Gubernare, yeah, there was no classical B, so they used to use a V to superimpose it. So the word government literally means, obviously we know the word ment, like in mentir from the French, means the Latin, it means of the mind. Gubernare means to control, so it literally interprets as mind control.
Mm. Telling you quite clearly what it is.
Yeah, and again, this goes to the occult, is that it's to make you believe that that thing, that entity, actually exists in the physical world, which it doesn't. It's clearly just merely words on a piece of paper or the vocalized expression of a sound. But the vast majority of the world's population believes in government. And it's like when I was driving around without any car tax or MOT, etc., comments I'd get from people would say, well, you don't have a right to be on the road. I said, well, you mean I don't have a right to be on the road? And they said, well, the government creates the roads. I said, well, that's an absolute fallacy. How can government, which is merely a word or the vocalized expression of a sound, create anything? It can't create anything. Men and people create roads. They're the ones that build roads. And as I am a member of the people, I have a right to use the roads. And the analogy that I'd give is if we were living on common land, so the land wasn't owned or, sorry, claimed by someone, you know, some claimed ownership of land, and I decided to build a bridge using materials from that land to build a bridge that spanned over that river, can I then charge someone to go over that bridge? Can I claim that bridge as my own? No, it's there for the people to use.
Yeah. Actually, this is an interesting process that we still see going on out here in the middle of Cymru, because we recently, when we were stayed somewhere over Christmas where they had a book full of really interesting and not too old photographs. They were probably 60, 70, 80 years old, these photos, maybe a bit more. And they actually had photos in there of groups of farmers with shovels and picks and stuff, who were building roads, and they were building bridges, and they were actually doing the stuff that they needed to do to keep it all running. And now it's kind of, it got to the point where the council were looking after, you know, nearly all of the roads and trackways and bridleways and all of that. And Synchro came across a bridleway recently that is completely overgrown and really massive muddy ruts because tractors have been going up and down it. And she was chatting with a farmer there who said that in his memory, the council did used to maintain that. And they've kind of They've kind of withdrawn from maintaining the bridleways. They've withdrawn from maintaining the footpaths. And I believe they're currently in the process of withdrawing from maintaining any roads that don't have a letter in front of them. You know, so A roads and B roads, they might still. So we can actually see our infrastructure collapsing as a result of having apparently entrusted these people with a job from which they are now just actively withdrawing. But I don't see any reason why, if people weren't having 80% of their income taken off them in tax, they may well have the time and the willpower and the, you know, the general capacity to take over the building of the bridges and the roads.
Well, at the end of the day, it's the people that create, you know, were the creative force in the universe. You know, governments, entities, etc., don't create. This is where, like with Satanism, Satanism just perverts. It never creates. So they take a symbol like the swastika, they turn it around the wrong way round, and they pervert the meaning of it. They've done it with Freemasonry. You know, all the occult traditions have been taken over by Satanists and dark Luciferians, and they pervert the meaning. They distort the truth. But it's funny, when you go back to the council and land, there's something interesting that I found out in Milton Keynes recently. And that was that there's an organisation called the Parks Trust. So it's a trust that are putting up signs all over Milton Keynes saying no trespass. They're putting restrictions on common land under the guise that they are now looking after the land for the benefit of the people. Something happened, actually. I'll give you a story. I was walking my dog one day down the river field, just down from a workshop, and there were some trees that had been cut up, and I just thought, there's a bit of firewood there. So I knew it had been freshly cut, so I was just assessing the weight of these pieces of timber. So I just, you know, took one hand and felt the weight of one of the pieces of timber, and it was quite heavy, it was still quite wet, so I just left it where it was, and I continued walking, and a guy was walking towards me, and he said, all right. I said, all right, mate. And as he walked past me, he said, and by the way, don't touch that wood, that's ours. So I, so I spun around and said, excuse me, sir, who are you? And he had a Milton Keynes Parks Trust badge on. And he said, I'm from Milton Keynes Parks Trust. And I said, so are you claiming ownership of that timber? And he said, we do own it. We own this land. And I said, but you're a trust. I said, who are the beneficiaries of that trust? He said, well, I don't know. I said, well, hold on. There has to be some beneficiaries of that trust. And as I would understand it, it's the people of Milton Keynes that are the beneficiaries of that trust, who have every right to use whatever materials that they see fit to take from here and use for their own benefit. And he said, no, you can't do that. And if you touch that, I'll phone the police.
Document and verify your claim, sir.
Well, I thought, well, this is an interesting scenario that I'll take full advantage of. I said, well, I tell you what, mate, I'm about to take some of that timber. Do you want to call the police and see how we get on? I said, because we're having an interesting scenario here. And he said, well, if you do take it, I will call the police. So I said, okay, I'm going to go and take some then, and we'll see how it pans out.
Well, his anyway, his approach worked really well then.
So the interesting fact that came through our discussion, though, was he said, I said, I think that the Parks Trust is a nefarious organisation. I don't trust it one bit. And I think they're up to no good. And he said, oh, are you talking about that £30 million loan? And I said, what £30 million loan? So he said, well, the Parks Trust, we had a £30 million. So anyways, he gave me the information. I went on their website and I found out the information, and it transpires that Milton Keynes Parks Trust, even though they've got millions in their bank account, they saw fit to go and get loans to buy properties up and down the country that they rent out. Now, I thought the Parks Trust, apparently what they present themselves to be doing was to be looking after the land for the benefit of the local people. But no, it appears that there's some kind of company that is buying up property and renting it out for profit. And what they're in effect doing is stealing the land from the people.
Yeah.
Because what they've done is when I started doing a bit of digging and started asking a few questions, common land that was held in perpetuity for the people, that was held by the council, Milton Keynes Council, to look after for the benefit of the people, they handed it over to Milton Keynes Development Corporation. And the assistant director of Milton Keynes Development Corporation was none other than Evelyn de Rothschild, which was surprising when I found out that snippet of information.
Oh, you've got your own local Rothschild, have you? How nice.
Well, he's the head of the Rothschild family as well. You know, he's the head of the worldwide Rothschild family, and he's here on our doorstep.
My God, so, they've got long fingers, haven't they, those people?
They really, really have. So I started questioning and sort of saying, well, hold on. Did Milton Keynes Council have the right to hand over the land that was held in, you know, perpetuity for the people to a corporation? Because it's Milton Keynes Development Corporation. I said, you know, run for profit corporation. And then in turn, they handed over that land that further obfuscates ownership to Milton Keynes Parks Trust. And now Milton Keynes Parks Trust are actually claiming ownership of the land, bearing in mind it's a trust. Mm. So, you know, hold on, do they own that frigging land?
And isn't there some kind of memorandum of understanding for the trust as well, saying what it's supposed to be doing?
Well, of course, but I'll tell you what, when you contact them, Nick, they're a bit short of answers. they tend to not respond, and I've been pushing them and pushing them, and they're getting to the stage where, well, we've got to the stage where they're no longer responding to me. But what I found is this is going on up and down the country, that there are these trusts that are going under the guise of taking over ownership of land to protect it for the people's interests, but actually they're stealing the land from us.
Yep, I gather that I've been reading in Private Eye about a corporation company of some sort that is in some way associated with the Forestry Commission. And what they're doing is they're building holiday cabins in the woods and then renting them to people at huge prices. Some of the things they're doing is apparent. They obviously have to do all of these kind of environmental surveys and all of that. And one hand doesn't know what the other hand's doing, as it were. So one lot goes in there to do an environmental survey and put down all these like neoprene mats to kind of attract lizards. And then another arm goes in there a few weeks later with a flail mower and rips the whole lot to shreds. And, you know, they are, again, same thing, really. They're claiming to be looking after the woodland. Apparently the woodland wasn't sold, you know, because of the uproar and all of that. But I'd say that the evidence is definitely the other way, that what we're witnessing with the taking over of the bridleways as well and the shutting of footpaths and ancient rights of way and stuff is basically the last land grab. That's what we're seeing at the moment.
Yeah, and of course what they're doing is they're handing it over to a different organisation or a corporation and another different corporation, and it obfuscates who actually, and of course as the further generation has come, it gets obfuscated about, hold on, this was actually common land that was owned by the people. What I found with in Milton Keynes was that there was numerous organisations that were involved, that was handed from one to another to another to another. And, of course, like I said, it obfuscates the ownership. And I actually had in some email correspondence from one of the head honchos at the Parks Trust, where they actually were claiming ownership of the land. And I pointed out, well, hold on, you're a trust. And if you're a trust, then how can you be claiming ownership of land?
Mm.
You know, that's whole. Who has the beneficial use of that land? Surely it's the people of Milton Keynes.
And you say that now they're not communicating with you anymore.
No, because once you start to ask the right questions, they start to ignore you.
So do you have any plans to take that... To continue to take that further?
Of course, yeah. I mean, what I'm in the process of doing is requesting a meeting with the people that I've been in discussion with, and to record it.
Yeah, yeah.
And you know, this is what I think we need to be doing is that I think what happened in Milton Keynes, and it probably happened up and down the country, was when the council were handing over land to Milton Keynes Development, corporation, who was selling it, that we're going to develop this town, we're going to make it great, we're going to bring work in here. No one questioned it. No one said a word. And of course, if you don't question, then they believe they have every right to carry on and do what they want to do. But unless we start questioning and putting people and holding people to task, then nothing's going to happen, which might lead us back into some things we were further discussing, and maybe we can go into council tax and
it would be interesting to talk about the council. Just before we do that, Toddy's put a couple of comments actually into the chat box, which I think are worth addressing. The first one says, if you don't turn up to court when they send you a summons, they'll deal with it in your absence. And then he's put, Toddy's put, they fine you, and if you don't pay, you get a red letter, and then you get court bailiffs coming round. So how do you get around that one? I think you probably have something to say on both of those.
Yeah, I certainly will.
Go for it. I'll have another beer.
Now, I'll give you an example. In 2010, I wrote to Anglian Water, and they had sent me a bill, or a demand, should I say, not a bill. They sent me a demand. And I wrote back to them and said, could you tell me what this demand is for? And they wrote back and they said, it's for supply of water to your property. Now, they didn't actually say anything about sewage. They just said it's for supply of water. And I said, well, I've been on your website and I found out that you're adding chloramine without my consent to our water supply. Now, as far as I know, water is, now I'll try and get this right. Is it 2 parts hydrogen and 1 part oxygen? You'll correct me if I'm wrong, Nick.
2 parts oxygen to 1 part hydrogen.
Yeah, I think I got that right.
Yeah.
Did I get that right? I think so. Anyway, so I wrote back to him and said, well, obviously, if you're adding another chemical to it, it changes the chemical structure. And can it now be construed as water? If you can provide demonstrable evidence that it's still water, then I'll gladly pay for it. Anyways, they didn't. So I said, well, I'm going to withhold payment until you provide me with demonstrable evidence that you're providing my house with water. Anyways, I haven't paid water bills since 2010. So we had various bailiffs round and debt collectors, and as we'll go into, very simple, don't answer the door. Yeah. If you're not confident, that is. I'm confident I'll answer the door, but I will say to people, if you're not confident, don't answer the door. It's simple. Go away. Anyways, they took us, they made a claim. They've taken us to court now 3 times. Everything is, what I generally do is I steam open their silly little envelopes. I read it, steam it back, seal it, send it back, address the unknown, return the sender. And anyways, we've been taken to court on 3 occasions over the last 2010, so 6 years. Nothing's happened. I'm not going to advise anyone. I'm just saying my own experience. We let them take us to their fictional courts. We let them make their judgments and nothing happens.
So does all the letters turn up on everything and you just RTS everything?
Everything. We just send it all back and nothing ever happens. Now, we do get bailiffs round on a regular basis. We had High Court Enforcement Officers round just a few weeks ago. They tell you that they got the powers of entry. They can kick your door. They can do what they like. No, they don't. They don't do a thing.
In your experience, do they even try the door when they come round?
No, they've never even... I mean, we've got CCTV cameras up. Whenever they've been round, we check the cameras, whatever, if we're aware that they've been round, and they've never even attempted to try and open the door.
I'd say that's very telling, that when you first told me that, because you're not the first, actually. I've known two or three other people who've got CCTV outside their front door who have reported the same experience, that they, because you can watch them, they come round and they hang around and maybe make a lot of noise and stuff, but I've so far not heard at all of them trying to open the door, which tells you that they do know the nature of the game, don't they?
Oh, they do. The other thing I might mention, though, is that we do have various notices up on our property border, on our door. We've got trespass notices. We've also got notices in our doorway that says that everything within this property is held within trust, and that any attempt to take any property will be deemed as theft.
Has anybody had a chance to try? I've seen those notices around the place, and as you know, I know how that system works.
Yeah.
Has anybody actually had a chance to try that yet? Has any bailiff actually tried to take stuff off people and defended it by it belonging to a family or a community trust?
I have a friend at the moment that's not exactly that same scenario, but basically he's said that all items that are, and he's dealing with this in court at present, that everything that he owns, he doesn't own anything. Should get that right.
Yeah.
that everything in his possession is within a private trust, and the court has demanded that they see the trust document. And he said that as the trustee of the trust, as it's a private trust, it's his job to obviously protect that trust, and he can't reveal that information.
Because it would be a breach of trust, so to do.
Exactly, it would be a breach of trust, and he won't be doing his job. And at the moment, it's created a bit of a standstill within the court. This has been going on for several months, and they've been struggling to deal with it.
Mm. I'd be very interested to hear how that one goes out, because that, of course, is something that we've heard about for a long time and could be easily achievable if it proves to be an operational option.
Well, I mean, David Rockefeller gave us a bit of an insight into it in his memoirs when he said, "I own nothing but control everything."
Yep.
What's that? That's a trustee of a trust.
Mm.
And of course, you give over, you know, ownership. You don't officially own anything, but you can control it in effect. I'm not always quite comfortable about that, because we're going into the legal system there, which has always been something that I've been dead against. But you know, there's different methods to try. And like I was saying about with council tax, we actually delved into the legal world. To you know, protect ourselves from those people within the council, those what would I call them, extortioners?
Yeah,
or attempted extortioners.
Highway robbers.
Yeah,
mafiosi.
Exactly. Yes.
So basically, you find the council something of a different proposition from say the people who are trying to get money out of you for water or anything else. They're slightly tougher nut to crack, are they?
Well, to be honest, we were going at things from a different angle, so we would try different things with different entities just to see what happened. I mean, this was just like, to be honest, I didn't give a fuck, and I was just thinking, I'll try whatever I can and see what works.
You really have to. That's the thing. There is a moral obligation to take action now.
Yeah, and without any fear, just go in and just think, do you know what? What I wanted to do was develop different methodologies of dealing with these people that weren't complex, because, you know, I'm not Simon Spaniard, I'm not Michael Benicia, and I can't be bothered to study statute, and I'm not as intelligent as those guys. But I thought, do you know what? I think there's ways of dealing, because we know they put everything in plain sight. And they do it for a reason, because we have free will. But I thought that there are methods that we can use that are simple. And if it's simple, then it's a method that everyone can use. So it's a true remedy. It's not a remedy if it's only for those that, you know, Oxford graduates that have a master's degree. Then it's not, you know, it's not a remedy. So,
in truth, we are finding that it is the simple remedies that work as well, thankfully.
Without doubt. I mean, Guy Taylor gave me a bit of help. We were sort of going down the same road, and I had an opportunity to spend some time with Guy, and he put me onto a few things. And with the council tax, I mean, going back several years, to 2010, we were basically using what in effect is been sort of coined as a Mark Stevens approach, even though we were unaware who Mark Stevens was at the time. And that was once we got sent a demand from the council, I was writing back to him saying, thank you very much for your offer of contract. However, I'd like to decline it. And they would write back and say, well, you have an obligation to pay, blah, blah, blah. And I'd say, well, could you please provide proof of that obligation? Mm-hmm. And they would just quote statute, which is the Local Government Finance Act. And I'd write back to them and say, well, I read through that act and I can't see how it applies to me. So could you please provide proof that that applies to me?
It's, again, document and verify the obligation, isn't it?
Yeah, exactly. Yeah, you can do it in any way, shape or form you like. Then they start coming back with silly things like, as a British citizen or a UK citizen, you have an obligation to pay. It's the same thing, same question over and over again, same answer over and over again.
And it is true, isn't it? If they don't answer your question, the best thing to do is just stick with it until they do.
Exactly. Keep on point. Keep focused. Just keep on point. Don't get too complex. Don't get distracted. Just keep on point. So they write back and say, as a UK citizen, you have an obligation to pay and accept our services. So please provide proof that I'm a UK citizen. And it just went on like this. And we just went round and round in circles.
But why? But why? But why?
So eventually they started threatening to have us put in prison. Mm-hmm. And I'd say, right, you know, and what we'd established, and I'd say to people, record everything you do. If you phone someone up, record it. If you write to someone, record all the correspondence that you get and document it.
Do you write to people by hand or do you use email?
I do both.
Right.
Both to make sure that it gets there.
Very good.
They can't deny they've received it. I've emailed it, I've written it, and it's been sent recorded delivery. I phone them up as well and record the phone conversations. But we phoned up the enforcement officer who was dealing with us at that specific time. And I said to her, you created this document, this summons, didn't you? And she admitted it on the phone. She said, well, yeah. And I said, do you know that's fraudulent? And she said, oh, it's authorised. I said, authorised by who? She said, by the court. I said, okay. I said, then you created this document that you say is a liability order. She said, yeah. I said, okay, that's fraud. She said, no, it's authorised by the court. So then what we did was we then copied and sent those documents to the court and said, I believe this is a fraudulent and bogus document that we've received. Could you please verify whether it's, you know, a correctly executed, authentic court document or whether, you know, it's to our worst fears, this is a bogan fraudulent claim. And what you find is the court won't respond. But we did have some email correspondence with one of the administrative people within Northampton Court. And she was very nice, and we said, "Oh, we're trying to find the records to these alleged claims. Could you please find out for us if there's any court records relating to these claims?" And she was emailing us back, and she said, "Oh, this is really odd. We can't find any records." And we said, "Oh, that's very strange. Could you keep trying?" And
shows how few people make that particular inquiry, eh?
So it should be totally
overrun with... with...
Well, we were a little bit, until we met up with Guy, we were a little bit experienced with this, but we just kept emailing the court. But we got a very interesting email back from this lady, this nice lady, and she said... what she actually did was she copied and pasted the court clerk's response that she got back from him. And it said, no longer correspond with Mr. and Mrs. Sinewave, but rather refer them to the council, which we thought was really odd. So anyways, we then put a subject access request to the Ministry of Justice requesting the records that relate to the claim. Now, if you go through the criminal procedure rules, I think it's 5.2, and it's headed duty of, I'm trying to think off the top of my head, duty of the court to keep records. It's something along those lines. That's not verbatim, but it's something like duty of the court to keep a record.
Yeah.
So obviously I have a duty to keep records. So we put in this subject access request and we got back from the Ministry of Justice. They have no records relating to these claims. Now, this is what people are finding now. Everyone's finding this out. Everyone who does the same thing is finding out they don't have any records, but the court has a duty to have records. So then we went back to the council and we said, well, we don't believe that there was ever a court ever heard this alleged claim. And therefore, if you attempt to carry on with this, you're committing fraud. And we quoted the various sections of the Fraud Act 2006 and said, if you carry on, we're going to go at you for fraud. And what we found was that all of a sudden we'd have a different enforcement officer that would take over the claim. Mm-hmm. So we'd go at them. And this is where I keep saying, go at people individually.
Well, that's funny you should say that, because Patrick's just put into the chat box, would the guest ever ask who is making the claim, what man or woman?
Oh, there never is a man or woman. We asked this question. We were saying, what man or woman, because they wouldn't sign anything.
Yeah.
So it will come from South Northants District Council. And we said, well, South Northants District Council can't make a claim against us. They don't exist.
Yeah.
You know, there is no such thing as South Northants District Council. Who is the man or woman making the claim?
Yep.
Of course, no. What we found was they had, prior to that, they'd been signing any document that they sent to us, and they stopped signing them. But the reason...
That is interesting. I've not heard of that happening before either.
No, they wouldn't sign any documents.
And that's the point, of course, isn't it? That, I mean, it's really worth highlighting that one, because it's been said for some time now that that requiring that it is made clear what man or woman is making the claim, or I particularly like, you know, are you accepting liability? Are you accepting in your private capacity liability for the claims you're making here today? And we've noticed that they stop talking when you do that to them.
Yes,
but to know that they actually stop signing documents once again shows that they know what's going on, and it verifies that your approach is on the button, does it not?
Without doubt. And proof of that is that eventually, after I think we had about four different enforcement officers that were playing musical chairs, we didn't hear anything. Eventually, the last person was the head of the legal department, who's a trained solicitor, and he wrote to us making the claim, and then I wrote back to him and said, I'm going at you for fraud. I mean, obviously, it was quite an elaborate letter. It was explaining the facts. And I said, now I've made you aware of the facts. See, this is what they try and do. They try and say, well, I'm not committing fraud because I'm not aware of the facts. So I'll say, make them aware of the facts. And then once they're aware of the facts and you make the claim that they're committing fraud, they can no longer claim ignorance.
Do you think that, I mean, just to spin off that for a minute and back into the kind of more esoteric side, do you think the same thing's true of us? You know, that whilst we don't know what's going on, we're kind of innocent. But once we find out what's going on, then we too are to an extent morally culpable and need to take action.
I had this exact conversation with a Kabbalah teacher, and I said, once you're conscious and you're aware what's going on, is your karma accelerated or increased by your knowing? And he said, yes. You know, because you're... it's like the difference between ignorance and nescience. You know, ignorance is not having the facts. Nescience is having the facts, but, you know, ignoring those facts. Sorry, nescience is not having the facts. Ignorance is having the facts, but ignoring them.
Mm,
So nescience is, you know, you may not get the karmic consequences of your actions via nescience, but when you're ignoring what the information that is there that's put in front of you, then yes, you will suffer.
Yeah, yes, indeed, it's time. So to a certain extent, I mean, taking responsibility in terms of action is only one of the ways we take responsibility. In a way, just the knowledge itself is landing us with new levels of responsibility, spiritually or in energetic terms.
Oh, without doubt. I mean, the more we know, the more moral we have to act and the more responsible we have to be.
Mm.
And, you know, and that's why spirituality is such hard work.
And I wonder also whether this is a kind of mechanism which works as a driving force as well, so that basically, as people, it's inevitable that people will find out more over time, and that as they find out more, they're just going to feel driven to taking action, which is going to be one of the, it's a thing that, you know, we were talking about, oh God, you know, 10, 15 years ago in one context or another, mostly in a spiritual context in terms of kind of the work we do with ceremony and all of that. And it was, we were doing that work for 10 years before I started seeing any change in the population around me. And now I do see exactly that kind of awakening, both spiritually and in terms of how we have to deal with the physical world. In fact, I'd actually go so far as to say that watching all the loads of really different people I've seen speaking for Truth Juice over the years, and having met now many hundreds of people who've been to those meetings, I'd say that it seems almost inevitable to me that once you start discovering the information that we're talking about, you inevitably end up on a spiritual path.
Yeah, without doubt. I mean, I see more and more people that are being led. I mean, Simon Spaniard will be a good example, that are being led to a spiritual path because the understanding comes from it, you know, that, hold on, there's far more to this than meets the eye. And what is this all about? You know, I believe that, you know, what it's all about is that we lead a more moral existence, which means we take action against what we see as, you know, immoral and wrong around us. And we don't have to really look too hard, do we, to find immorality around us just about everywhere.
No, one of the things I like to point out when I start thinking about that particular aspect of things is that day in, day out, week in, week out, the people that we actually meet and with whom we're interacting and stuff are all absolutely all right. You know, whilst there seems to be this huge level of kind of threat, actually on the ground, people are really grand.
Yeah, I mean, I don't know if you've come across Freeman Fly. He's an American guy who researches the occult, and he actually went round. He got like a mobile home, and he drove around America. I can't think what he called it. He sort of coined a name for it, like a phrase for it. And what he found was that basically he went around with nothing. And what he found was that people, wherever he went, were so incredibly generous and kind and helping and good-natured. And it went against this whole idea that actually we're all corrupt, we're all evil. You know, there's this whole concept that you find, well, that's the way we are. We're just intrinsically bad. It's something that I don't believe in. It's something I believe we're intrinsically good. I believe that the people that have, you know, maybe gone awry are those. And again, this would go into a very occultic notion. Are those that have been taken over by entities that are influencing their behaviour. But I don't think it's natural for a human being to be immoral, to be bad, to, you know, not be an intrinsically good person.
No, and I think that the kind of conditioning and education that we've had and the entirely fictional and kind of obverse nature of the world we're living in disguises our kind of natural innocence and interest and willingness to help, but only on the larger sphere, as it were. Still at the kind of pixel level where we're actually working, those qualities are still quite evident.
Yeah, without doubt. I mean, like you said, once you get into a community, once you actually speak to people, once you get to know people, you only need to look at disasters. It's been documented that whenever there's a disaster, and this is well documented, that people, and something I've experienced with something, you know, just recently with a fire in the town where I work, was that actually people come together and people want to help.
Yeah, absolutely.
And it's not that, you know, people have this idea that, oh, God, people are going to want to start kicking windows in and stealing stuff. And when these properties are vacant, like, you know, I was telling you the other week, there was a fire where I live. So people were evacuated from their homes. And actually, we found the complete opposite, that people wanted to help. And of course, you get the odd few people that want to be voyeurs and they want to video it and take selfies and whatever. But the vast majority of people are there to help. They're concerned. The amount of phone calls I got and texts from people saying, is your workshop okay? Was just incredible. And it's, you know, it's really, it's heartwarming to think that, you know, people are honestly decent, good and moral. And like you said, we've been conditioned, and there is conditioning. And if we want to see people change, like Gandhi said, we've got to be the change we want to see in the world. We've got to demonstrate how we can behave, morally. And we'll see that, you know, society, I don't like that word, but us as a group of people will all benefit and help each other.
Yeah, and I think we see that basically time and time again, and hopefully as things become a little bit, because it does seem to me that we work a lot better for some reason under stress, again perhaps because of the conditioning, but obviously the situation is becoming incredibly stressful, so presumably we will be working much more closely together. Luke Uniquely has just put a funny one in the chat. He's put, when you think about it, we are evil to the system. They are lordly, pious, allegedly saintly even, and we're the fecking demons that get summoned through the fire and punished.
Could you say that again, Nick? I missed that.
Yeah, it was Lee in the chat box has put, when you think about it, we are evil to the system. They are lordly, pious, allegedly saintly even, and we're the fecking demons that get summoned through the fire and punished.
We do if we behave immorally.
Yeah.
And that the immoral behavior is buying into the system. We know it's evil. I mean, you know, you don't need to be Einstein to work that out, that the system is evil. You know, you only, like I was saying earlier, only need to read headlines on David Icke's latest headlines or various other news sources to realize that the system is entirely evil. So if we buy into it, we are, by definition, we're supporting evil.
Yeah.
So our actions are evil, which is why it's so important to get out of the system. Don't acknowledge it in any way, shape or form. And I appreciate it's difficult. It's not easy for most people. But to start grassroots on a very basic level, do what you can to get out of the system. Stop using corporations if you can. You know, start using family businesses, you know, your local greengrocers, you know, whatever you can to get out of the system.
Because that way you're not only supporting your local resources and stuff, you're actually making a statement of intent and attention as well, which can make big changes.
Exactly, and it's again, the intention. What's that do? Goes out into the universe and has an effect. But, you know, people start growing their own food. Stop paying taxes. And as we can demonstrate, and, you know, we've proved time and time again, you can do it. It's very simple. I think, you know, the format of the chat tonight that we were sort of meant to have was And we've sort of done it, was about the return to sender, not answering the door, that it works, it's powerful, we can all do it, everyone can do it, and it has an effect, and it works.
And I think there's a third leg to that particular stool that we haven't touched on, which is that, should anybody actually turn out rather miraculously to have the right to kick down your front door and to actually execute it, when you come face to face with these situations, once again, if you have no confidence in what you're saying, it is completely and totally safe to say nothing.
Without doubt, and I'd add to that, we're working on this at the moment. Norman, who you'll know, Norman has devised an idea about putting almost like security tags on your property that's then registered in a database. So if any bailiff, a high court enforcement officer, etc., wants to kick your door in and take your property, you can prove that that property was in a trust.
Yeah.
And if it's documented, and if it's the serial numbers are taken down, registered on a database that can be quickly verified by someone else. Obviously, we have to do this in tandem. It can't be done from one person. Then we can quickly verify that that is the trust equipment, therefore you don't own it and they have no right to take it.
And it'll pretty quickly become apparent whether that that works or not. It must be pointed out that if somebody does come in and tries to take your stuff, that it has been proven in the past by people that if you can successfully totally ignore them, even at that point they will go away and take none of your stuff with them.
Yeah, again, if you don't provide any sort of force for them to
act against,
then you quite find you do find the dynamics change.
Yeah,
I had a friend who used to say whenever any alleged authority came around his house, the first thing he used to do was sit on his doorstep and let them have the higher ground. And he said the dynamics would change instantly.
Interesting. Yeah. And that's another thing, isn't it? I think that it's quite good to, I know that logic and reason and comprehension plays a big part in this, but like any other relationship, like any other interaction with other men and women, when we're under duress, our intuition can be particularly accurate and particularly useful. And I think it has a great part to play in such situations, potentially.
Yeah, intuition is, I think, a valuable tool for us to act on. I use it almost exclusively now. When I started going down this path, I just thought, right, from now on, I will react on intuition, which is, it's not fear-based. It's coming from the heart, so it's not based in fear. And once we align ourselves with fear, if you understand the principle of mentalism, that the world is a mental construct, and you look at some of, I know I was talking to you about a book when we last spoke, Nick, called The Kybalion.
Yeah.
Which goes into detail about the seven hermetic principles. And the first being that the first principle is that the world is a mental construct. It's the principle of mentalism. But you also have the principle of vibration. So when we vibrate through fear, it's a very slow vibration. And we all know about the law of attraction and what attracts when we are vibrating from that low density, fear-based modality of consciousness.
We attract a world that that basically validates the existence of what we're feeling.
Yes, without doubt. And we can change that via our own mental attributes. We can change that condition. One of the other laws is the law of polarity, and that dictates that hot and cold are the same thing. That's the analogy used, that they're just different degrees of heat.
Yeah, I like to say that you can't have a stick's got to have two ends.
yeah, so we can change that polarity via the law of vibration. Very, very important hermetic principles that we can all study And like I said,
one of the things I really like about my geometry talk now is that I show that that happens through a specific form of growth of the cube. The cube slowly but surely turns into an octahedron, and the octahedron slowly but surely over two or three mutations turns into a cube. So I think that one thing becomes another over time and then goes back again, and we're simply capable of affecting that process.
By symbolism.
Yeah. Symbols are really useful as demonstrations of how that process works, if you like, so that you can then use it in the more complex business of real life.
Yeah, without doubt. I mean, symbols are a language that we all understand, but unfortunately, consciously, people don't appreciate that. But we're surrounded by symbols, and they do have a massive, massive effect on us. And as you demonstrated, they can change our vibration.
Yeah, one of the things we've noticed is that most of the geometries that are important to us are actually represented in trademarks of the various corporations. And I've frequently pointed out to people and said, you know, we should be grateful for them, because if they weren't keeping them in front of our eyes, nobody else would be. But the point is that once you understand the geometry and can see it and know it for what it is and how it relates, because all the geometries relate to earth, air, fire, water and ether, or marriages of them. And once you know that about the geometry, rather than just the fact that it's a trademark trying to sell you a bank or a chicken burger or something, then the actual power of the trademark is lost and the real beauty of the geometry comes out. So it's a kind of little consciousness transformation all in itself.
Yeah, and this is where we can combat Satanism, because as you just pointed out, geometry, you'll see earth, air, fire and water and spirit, and which is personified in the pentagram.
Yeah.
And, the pentagram being our five protrusions, the head representing spirit, the arms and the legs representing earth, air, fire and water. And in Satanism, they perverted that symbol by pointing it upside down with the point pointing downwards, saying our spirit was below the material world. And you'll see this in corporate logos.
Everywhere, man. The Pentagon is absolutely everywhere. It's totally rife.
Oh, yeah. And I noticed it with Heineken. Heineken are the sponsors of the Champions League, the biggest football competition or club competition in the world. And they sponsor the Champions League, and you'll see an advert in between the halftime of the Champions League. And I couldn't get it at first. And I kept thinking, what the bloody hell is this? You know, you got this Heineken, which we all know beer is bad for you. But it's got this pentagram symbol. And Anton LaVey said, I think it was in the Satanic Bible, that in Satanism we pervert and distort meanings by turning them upside down, inside out, and the wrong way round. So if you get the Heineken logo and you stick it in a mirror upside down, what you'll see is the pentagram is upside down, the I in Heineken, which the dot and the line represents man, his consciousness above his physical body. But more telling is that the E's in Heineken, perfectly spaced, spell out 666.
I did actually look at that after I'd spoken to you about it. You're absolutely right.
Yeah, you'll see it with Relentless energy drink as well. You'll see it with Chesterfield cigarettes. You'll see it with the Monster energy drink, where it's decoded as Vav, the Hebrew symbol, which numerical value is 6. So you've got three Vav symbols, which is 666. You'll see it in a Foster's can, where you've got three prominent Fs on a Foster's can, and obviously F is the sixth letter of the alphabet. You'll see it everywhere. You'll see it in mini eggs. If you look at mini eggs or Cadbury's cream eggs, and you'll see that egg is spelt with a, you know, again, they're turned around, they're upside down, whatever, but they're giving you the 666 symbol.
Mm.
Which is order number nine.
It's brilliant, isn't it? So these are all kind of basically subliminal stuff that's embedded in everything around us. And it's, as we outlined at the beginning, it's all to do basically with summoning dead entities to life so that you can charge them. But like you say, return to sender's always got to be worth a try, because, I mean, hey, what harm can it do? And I really like addressee unknown. Don't open the door, and if all else fails, keep your mouth shut, and you probably stay out of all sorts of trouble. I'd just like to return, before we go, to a couple of things. One is the kind of notices on the door, the withdrawal of the implied right of access and all that sort of stuff.
Yeah.
I like to think myself that if you want to keep it simple, then a sign which says private, no trespass, should do the job, shouldn't it?
Yeah, we've got exactly that on our front. That's the very first sign that people would be met with.
Basically all the stuff about removal of implied right of access are said, they're actually said in the word, in the words, no trespass is my understanding. But I like private as well, because it just makes sure that these public entities know what they're dealing with.
Yeah, exactly. Exactly. And it does work. I mean, when I was in court with HMRC, the representative for HMRC in court was quite a nice lady, actually. I had a good chat with her. I said to her, your enforcement officers round, and they came to my door and they ignored my trespass notices. And she said, oh, they shouldn't have done that. I said, really? And she said, no. And I said, what would you have done? She said, I wouldn't have honoured it, and I wouldn't have entered your property.
Mm.
So sort of go some way to prove that, you know, these things work.
Yeah. Yeah, indeed. Well, I think that's been most instructive, sign. Maybe I've really enjoyed that chat, and I'm sure we'll get to talk again sometime.
Yeah, certainly. I mean, there was quite a few things we didn't have a chance to go through, but
yeah, we'll sweep those into a heap. What was and do them again? Do them some other time, perhaps. But what was the upshot of the in the end with the council tax? Did you end up having to hand over thousands of pounds, or did you see them off as well?
No, not at all. The upshot of it was, we got sidetracked as we're
doing. I interrupted you, probably.
No, it's fine. But no, we had the head of the legal department, a trained solicitor, who I responded to. He didn't respond to me. It was over a year. And then we had a new guy that came on the scene. And so what I always do, I arrange a meeting with him. And I do it specifically so that I can record it and so that I can meet them face to face and have a little chat with them. And so we had this new guy, and he was quite amiable, and he was very interested with the information. He told us that he'd worked within enforcement and tax collection for over 40 years. And we presented him with the information. I said, you seem like a very nice guy, and I really... You know, I don't want to bother you. I don't, but if you bother me, we will unfortunately have to go at you for fraud. And now we've presented you with this information, then unfortunately we'll have to do that. But I don't want that to happen. Hopefully we can amicably settle this matter. And anyways, we had some correspondence via email, and I looked him up on the internet, and I found out that he had his own company that specialised in revenue collection.
Nice search.
Yeah, very nice. So I sent him an email, and I said, Dear Doug, I said, I've just looked you up on the internet, and I found out that you've got your own revenue collection company. So could we just clarify our position here, and could you tell me, are you a direct employee of the council, i.e., you know, you're under contract? And
another useful question, folks.
Etc. Or have you been outsourced as a third party that has a third party interest in this matter?
Yeah.
And it went completely dead, and I haven't heard from Doug for It's been about 3 months and he never responded. Bearing in mind, he answered every single email I sent him. I'd send him that evening. I got a response as I opened my emails that morning. There was a response from him. So he's gone dead. So no, we still haven't paid anything. They haven't threatened to put us in prison just lately. Prior to Doug getting on board, they had. No, we're still here and we won't be going to court. So, if they do invite us to their fictional courts, and it's quite clear that I don't think anyone's really quite sussed out what's going on with the council, with the court, etc. But we noticed some very interesting things, and that was that when I wrote to them, I was saying, was this claim heard at Northampton's Magistrates Court? Because they were saying it was heard by Northampton's Magistrates Court.
No doubt kind of lurking in the bulk centre somewhere.
Yes, yeah. Yes. And I think there was a very sort of interesting use of words there. But yeah, we kept saying, was it heard by... Sorry, we were saying by... and what I think they're referring to is it was heard at the building. And we were saying, no, but was it heard by Northampton's Magistrates Court? But there's an interesting little side note there. I was in court on one particular occasion and the judge said to me, if you continue, I'll have you in contempt of court. And I said to him, sorry, what am I in contempt of? And he said, the court. And I said, what is the court? And he said, what do you mean? And I said, well, what is the court? Is it a building? Is it a group of people? Is it this room?
Is it you?
Merely a name? Yeah. What is it? And he said, I'm not quite sure what you mean. I said, well, how can I be in contempt of a non-physical entity? You know, how can I contempt a building, yeah, or a room? Or a name, whatever. And he said, we'll move on. So that appeared to work.
Yeah.
But it's an interesting concept of, to explore what exactly a court is.
It's a good, what everything is, isn't it, really? What about HMRC?
Say it again, sorry, Nick.
What about HMRC? Did you see them off?
I've not heard from them since 2010, so it's been 6 years. And what we did was exactly the same with my wife. She was employed by the council, funny enough, up until I think it was 2013.
Must have been a laugh.
Yeah, it was, yeah. once she came back to the world of the living, she was immediately, we had correspondence from HMRC, and I said, let's return them all to sender, addressee unknown. And we only had a couple of letters and we returned them all. And again, nothing. We've done this with numerous things. I had a bank account that had connected accounts with it. There was two different business accounts and a private account that was attached to it, a personal account that was attached to it. And I thought, what do we do with this? There was overdrafts, there was credit cards. The overdrafts were up to the limit. Credit cards were spanked out to the max on it. And I thought, right, what are we doing? I thought, I tell you what, I'm going to try this. Ignore them. So we just ignored them. And that was with my account. And that was going back to 2012. Of course, constant letters, just return them all, just return them all, no longer at this address. We did the same with my wife's. Again, there was no draft facility that was up to the max. There was credit card that was up to the max. And we said, well, we'll just do the same thing. And we just returned all mail. Very simple, very easy. Anyone can do it. And we've never had a claim made against us.
And I guess you didn't then subsequently go out and do it to another load of credit cards, just to be clear.
No, I'd done that prior, actually. The old approach that I used was I wrote to them, and there's a big thanks to a guy called Wobbly. You may have come across
Wobbly. Yeah, I've come across Wobbly.
Yeah, well, Wobbly provided me with this, and I sort of changed it a little bit. Not much. I give him credit for it. And this was very, very simple. And I used to write to the credit card companies with this very simple letter. I'd say, I'd like to settle the above reference account, i.e. the credit card number, in exchange for the original note of indebtedness in its original and unaltered form. If you're not the corporation, if you're not the holder in due course, then please direct me to the person stroke corporation that is. And that was basically it. And you do a 2-3-stage letter process. Second letter would be basically the same thing, said, oh, you didn't respond.
I'll give you another few days.
Yeah. And I made probably about half a dozen credit cards go away with that. Very, very
because simple. That, as Simon Spaniard explains, you have actually handed over to them a security, and once you've paid the money back, you have a right to have the security back. If not, it's like going into a pawn shop, having given them a gold watch with the money and the interest, and them saying, sorry, we haven't got the gold watch. Are you going to hand over the money still?
Yeah, the agreement is the security. The agreement is the promissory note. You signed it, you made a promise to pay, etc. They then securitize that, monetize it, sell it off to the name of the, oh, it's just completely escaped me, but basically they securitize it, and they pull these securities together and send them, sell them off, and a group of people will buy into them, and they no longer own that debt.
Anybody who hasn't seen The Big Short, watch it now.
Yeah.
On that subject.
Yeah. The whole thing is fraudulent. It's fictional, and once we understand that, then we can see through it and we can find ways of dealing with it. Another interesting point was when I wrote to one of the credit card companies, MBNA, and I sent them the letter that I just gave earlier, and they wrote back to me and they said, in order to establish who you are, we need your signature. So I wrote back to them and said, as you'll be very well aware, my signature is extremely valuable. And for these purposes, I value it at £3,000, which equated to the alleged debt that was owed. So if you'd like to make payment, you can do it via check or back transfer to this account, etc. And then I can provide you with a signature. And we got a stalemate just purely with that.
Yeah. Well, I mean, I think that, again, for me, as we've talked about these subjects so many times, but every time somebody new comes on to talk about these things, I learn more stuff, and I'm ever so grateful for the time you've put in, and I've learnt plenty, and it is really, you only need the basics, eh?
Well, it's been my pleasure, by the way, and this is what I was trying to convey to the listeners, is that, I'm a very simple man. I was booted out of school from a very early age. And what I was trying to do was find remedies that the common man, common woman could use. And I found them, and I just wanted to convey them to the listeners that you don't need to spend years and years studying law, studying statute to find a way out. We can do it very, very simply from understanding a few principles, knowing who we are. As the Oracle of Delphi said, know thyself and you will know the universe and the gods. Once we know who we are, we can find remedy.
Yeah, absolutely great. That's very stylish finish there. Before I let you go, will you, you can help me provide a link to the next music break by talking to me, giving me your reactions to this little item I found on CNN. where basically the punchline is that a judge has ruled that stealing food when you're in a state of necessity is not a crime. But it's much richer story than that. Get this. The guy was, he's a 36-year-old Ukrainian national called Roman Ostryakov, and he had goods to the value of €4.07 under his coat, right, whilst he was purchasing some breadsticks. He was apparently reported to shopkeepers by another customer and was subsequently arrested by police. In 2013, Ostryakov was convicted of theft and sentenced to 6 months jail and a €100 fine. Okay, then the ruling was appealed but upheld in 2015. And this is where the really funny bit comes in, because what a story, eh? This week, Italy's Supreme Court of Cassation, whatever that is, C-A-S-S-A-T-I-O-N, the Supreme Court of Cassation in Italy, overturned the conviction entirely. It ruled that stealing small amounts of food to sustain a vital need is not a crime. Quote, the condition of the defendant and the circumstances in which the seizure of merchandise took place prove that he took possession of that small amount of food in the face of an immediate and essential need for nourishment. Acting, therefore, in a state of necessity, an interesting phrase. Therefore, his theft does not constitute a crime, it argued. And then, get this, the appeal was brought forward by the General Prosecutor's Office in Genoa, which argued that since Ostryakov never left the premises of the shop with the stolen goods, he should be charged with attempted theft, not theft. So that's why they brought it back to court. What do you think of all? Pick the bones out of that.
I was just going to laugh at it, to be quite honest.
Isn't it amazing? All that money. Can you imagine with an appeal and then this kind of this court of cassation calling it back? And also the business that all of it came about because another customer reported it to shopkeepers. We have really got to stop doing that to each other, folks.
That was the sad part of the story. I mean, I shouldn't have laughed. I mean, most of it was laughable, but
yeah,
that bit got me. It was like we're all policing each other.
Yeah.
And, you know, no one is recognising the fact that someone might be in need and that actually, you know, I mean, I can't actually believe the court ruled in that way with a bit of common sense. I mean, that's the bit that's blinded me. I mean, what?
And €100 fine and 6 months in Nick.
Yeah, I mean, incredible.
That's what you're voting for, guys. That is what you're voting for, if you're voting. Well, thank you very much, Sinewave. It's been a real pleasure having you on, so I'm really glad we got it together. And I look forward to seeing you again soon.
I look forward to seeing you again too, brother. Thank you, Doctor. It's been a pleasure.
Well, thanks so much for being there. I'll hang on the line. I'll have another quick chat. But when I can find my broadcaster, which is just there, I'm going to play Shoplifting in Tesco. A great little groove from the Cujo family. Here it comes for you, folks. And I'll be back in 5 or 6, 7 minutes by the look of it. Dr. Rock's radio show on raconteursnews.com, and I've been speaking with Sinewave. Here we go.